Welcome to the deep dive. We sort through the noise, the articles, the data, the chatter, to pull out what you actually need to know.
And today, we're doing something a bit different. We're focusing really tightly on just one day. September 25th, 2025.
Just one day.
Yeah, because this specific date, well, it packed in so much. It really shows how fast AI is shifting from just being, you know, a tool to basically underpinning everything. Global infrastructure, really.
Okay, so it's not just minor updates we're talking about. It's the big shifts. Finance, material science, even how we track storms.
Exactly. So our mission today is to pull out those key moments, those aha insights from that single day sources, and give you the context.
Sounds good. I saw mentions of AI passing incredibly tough exams and designing new materials.
Oh, yeah. We've got AI acing the world's hardest finance exam in minutes. We've got systems literally designing materials scientists dreamed of. And real-time hurricane tracking that's potentially life-saving. It's quite a day.
All right, let's jump in. Capabilities first. That finance exam. The CFA, right? Chartered Financial Analyst. That thing is legendary for being difficult.
It's a beast.
Right.
Seriously. Humans usually spend, what, about 1,000 hours studying for it across all three levels?
1,000 hours? Wow.
And level three, that's the kicker. It's not just multiple choice. It's got these complex essay questions.
Yeah.
You need real judgment, real rationale.
And AI couldn't handle that before.
Nope, not really. Just a couple of years ago, models were okay at pulling data, but that deep financial reasoning for the essays, they failed.
But on September 25th, that changed.
Completely. Our sources show 9 different models from OpenAI, Google, Anthropic, you name it, they all passed all three levels.
9 models. Okay. Was there a standout?
Yeah. OpenAI's O4 Mini. It actually scored highest on that tough essay part, 79.1%, which is remarkable.
And how long did it take the AI compared to the 1,000 human hours?
Minutes. Literally minutes to do the whole thing. The research, the analysis, writing the rationale.
Okay, hold on. If the AI can write the perfect report in minutes, what's left for the human analyst? Are they just, like, signing off on the AI's work? Doesn't that introduce risk?
That's the big question, isn't it? The thinking is the human role shifts. It moves away from generating the raw analysis. The AI does that now and focuses much more on the client relationship.
So soft skills, judgment.
Exactly. Understanding the client's actual risk tolerance, their biases, navigating weird market stuff. Things the AI might miss. You're paid for trust in context, not just the report itself.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's pivot. From finance to physics, you mentioned AI designing materials.
Right. MIT unveiled this thing called SEI Jane. It's an AI framework specifically for designing brand new quantum materials.
Quantum materials. Those are important for future tech, right? Like better computers, batteries, clean energy.
Absolutely. They're kind of the key ingredients.
Yeah.
But finding new ones is usually super slow, lots of trial and error in the lab, very expensive.
So how does SEI Gen speed that up?
Well, the clever part is it builds in rules about physics and geometry directly into the AI model.
Why does that matter?
Because it stops the AI from suggesting crazy structures that just wouldn't work in the real world.
Mm.
Things that are physically impossible or unstable. That's where older models often went wrong.
Ah, okay. So it filters out the junk proposals.
Pretty much. By using these rules, SEI Gen generated something like 10 million potential material structures.
Yeah.
And right away, it flagged about 1 million of those as likely stable and worth investigating.
10 million down to 1 million viable candidates. That's huge.
It's way more potential leads than scientists could explore traditionally in, you know, maybe a decade.
And did they prove it works? Did they actually make any?
They did. The sources confirmed they synthesized 2 completely new complex alloys, TPDBi and TPBSeb, based on SEI Gen's predictions. They worked.
Wow. So it's not just theory. That really could shorten the timeline for breakthroughs.
Exactly. And what's interesting is it's kind of the same type of advanced reasoning that let the AI pass the CFA exam. Just applied differently, you know, filtering signal from noise based on deep understanding.
Okay, before we get to the market side, quick hits on how we interact with this stuff. 2 big launches that day?
Yeah, user-facing stuff. First, Google rolled out Search Live in the U.S. You basically point your phone camera at something, ask a question out loud, and the AI tells you about it.
Like Google Lens, but with voice and maybe smarter?
Kinda, yeah. But the tech behind it, Query Fan Out, is interesting. It doesn't just answer your exact question. It tries to guess related things you might ask next and finds that info, too.
So it's more comprehensive, trying to anticipate your needs.
Right. Less like a search box, more like a helpful person looking around with you.
Okay, and the other one, OpenAI.
OpenAI previewed ChatGPT Pulse. This is different. It makes ChatGPT proactive.
Proactive how?
Based on your past chats, maybe connected apps like your calendar or email, it works overnight, does research, figures out next steps for your projects or questions, and presents them to you in the morning.
Exactly. Like a personalized briefing with suggestions. It's trying to work for you while you sleep, connecting the dots from yesterday.
That's potentially very useful. Or maybe a bit creepy, depending on how you look at it.
Huh, yeah. Definitely a fine line there.
Okay, let's switch gears. That covers capability. Now the infrastructure and market stuff. The business side. Sounds like things got intense.
Oh, yeah. Big strategic moves. You start seeing major players trying to, well, de-risk their bets. Microsoft is a prime example.
Microsoft. But they bet huge on OpenAI, didn't they?
They did. Massive investment. But on this day, they announced they're bringing Anthropic's models, Claude Opus 4.1 and Sonnet 4, into their Copilot studio and into their researcher agent.
Anthropic. That's OpenAI's main competitor, right? So Microsoft is using both now.
Well, the main Copilot product still runs on OpenAI, but adding Anthropic to the studio and researcher, that's a big signal.
What's the signal? Avoiding getting locked in.
Yeah.
Exactly. They need options. What if Anthropic suddenly gets way better at, say, legal analysis? Mm. Or Google makes a leap? Microsoft needs to be able to switch models easily. Flexibility is key.
Makes sense. Vendor lock-in is dangerous at this stage. What about talent?
Oh, the talent wars are fierce. That day, Meta apparently poached a pretty senior OpenAI scientist, Yang Song.
What did Song do at OpenAI?
Led their strategic explorations team. His earlier work was important for DALL-E too. So losing him is probably a blow to OpenAI's longer-term research.
And where did he go at Meta?
Meta Superintelligence Labs. And get this, his new boss there is Shenjia Zhao, who is also an OpenAI alum.
Wow.
And the rumor mill, well, the sources suggest Zhao himself had maybe threatened to go back to OpenAI before Meta made him chief scientist. It's all very high-stakes chess, or maybe soap opera.
Sounds like it. These top researchers are clearly incredibly valuable assets.
Trillion-dollar assets, potentially. There just aren't many people who can build these things.
And to run these massive models, you need massive infrastructure, data centers. Alibaba comes into play here.
Big time. The demand for AI-focused data centers is just exploding. Alibaba had already committed, I think, $53 billion over 3 years.
$53 billion.
Yeah. But their CEO, Eddie Wu, said on this day that they actually expect to spend more than that. The demand and the pace of development are just outstripping even their own aggressive plans.
Where are they building? Is it just China?
No, that's the key. It's global. New centers planned for Brazil, France, the Netherlands, Mexico, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Dubai.
It's everywhere. It sounds like a direct challenge to the U.S.-centric cloud providers.
It definitely looks like a strategic push to build a global AI foundation, especially hitting the global South, Europe, other parts of Asia.
And are they building their own models too?
Oh, yes. That same day, they debuted Qwen3 Max, claimed over a trillion parameters.
All right.
And they put out benchmarks suggesting it beat rivals like Anthropic's Claude on some tasks. It's a full stack race, infrastructure and models.
And the overall spending prediction.
The CEO predicted global AI spending could top $4 trillion in the next 5 years.
$4 trillion. Okay. That number puts everything else in perspective. This isn't a niche tech sector anymore.
Not even close. It's the foundation of the next economy being built right now.
All right, let's totally shift gears again. From trillions of dollars to saving lives with weather forecasts, what was happening on September 25th?
We had a really tricky situation in the Atlantic. Tropical storm Humberto was already there. And another system, Invest 94L, likely to become Imelda, was developing nearby.
Okay, two storms close together. That's bad, right?
It can be really bad. There was serious concern about something called the Fujiwara effect.
Fujiwara, what's that?
Basically, when two storms get close enough, they start interacting. They can sort of orbit each other like a weird dance, and it makes their future tracks incredibly hard to predict. Very dangerous.
Makes forecasting even tougher than usual.
Massively tougher. And this is where AI weather models are really starting to shine.
How so? What's different from traditional weather models?
Okay, so traditional models, NWP, numerical weather prediction, they run these incredibly complex physics simulations on massive supercomputers. Powerful, but slow. A single forecast run can take hours.
Hours. Mm-hmm. When a storm is approaching, hours matter a lot.
Exactly. Now, AI models like Google's GraphCast or the European Center's AIFS, they work differently. They're trained on decades of past weather data. They learn the patterns.
So they don't do the physics simulation?
They basically skip it. They recognize patterns from the past to predict the future. And the crucial thing is speed. They can generate a full 15-day forecast in seconds.
Seconds compared to hours.
Yeah. On pretty standard computers, sometimes even a laptop.
Wow. So meteorologists can run way more scenarios.
Exactly. Instead of waiting hours for one model run, they can run dozens almost instantly. That's how you get those spaghetti models showing lots of possible paths. They can quickly see the consensus, the ensemble mean.
And is it more accurate? Does the speed trade off with quality?
That's the amazing part. It seems to be more accurate, at least for track forecasting. The data point from the sources is striking. On average, AI models predict a hurricane's track over 85 miles closer to where it actually goes at the 5-day mark compared to some top traditional models.
85 miles closer. 5 days out. That's a huge difference for evacuations and preparation.
There's a life-saving margin, potentially.
So a practical tip for you listening, when you see hurricane maps online, don't freak out about one single scary-looking line, right?
Right. Ignore the single shock model path that sometimes goes viral. Look for the cluster, the thick line, the cone that's the ensemble mean, the consensus across many models, both AI and traditional. That's the most likely area.
And even the official cone from the National Hurricane Center, that's not a guarantee either, is it?
No, definitely not. That cone just shows where the center of the storm is expected to be about 60-70% of the time. Impacts like rain and wind happen well outside the cone. It's about uncertainty.
Which these AI models are helping to reduce. Okay, last section. The human side of all this. Trust, ethics, safety. There was a report about developers.
Yeah, Google's DORA report. It had this really interesting paradox about developers using AI tools for coding.
What was the paradox?
Well, adoption is massive. Like 90% of developers are using AI tools now. And 80% say it makes them more efficient. So everyone's using it. It clearly works.
Okay, so what's the paradox?
The paradox is trust. Despite using it constantly, about 30% of those developers said they trust the AI's output only a little, or even not at all.
Wait, they don't trust it, but they use it in their professional work anyway. How does that work?
It's actually kind of a good thing, maybe. It suggests they aren't just blindly accepting the AI's code. You're using it to get faster, to generate drafts, debug.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still applying their own human judgment as the final check.
Ah, so they're leveraging the productivity but keeping quality control, using it like an assistant, not an oracle.
Exactly. It's a feature, not a bug.
Yep.
That they maintain that skepticism.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, a different kind of trust issue. Digital likeness. Stan Lee, what was that about?
Yeah, big controversy erupted over the announcement of the Stan Lee experience. It was supposed to be this interactive hologram debuting at LA Comic-Con.
An interactive hologram of Stan Lee after he passed away.
Right. And fans, well, many fans reacted very negatively online, calling it ghoulish, distasteful, disrespectful.
I can see why that would feel uncomfortable. What did the creators say?
The companies involved, Cartoon Studios, Proto Hologram, Hyperreal, they defended it, said it was meant as an immersive tribute, a way to extend his legacy for fans. They specifically mentioned, we'll never put words in his mouth.
So using his likeness and maybe voice, but not making up new dialogue, still, it's a tricky ethical line.
Very tricky. It taps into deeper questions about post-mortem consent, legacy, and whether we should digitally resurrect cultural figures like this. The tech wasn't really the issue. It was the should we.
Yeah. And that connects back to everyday life, right? With AI image generation and face swapping becoming so easy, you had some safety tips.
Yeah, just some basic digital safety hygiene, especially if you're sharing photos of family online.
Like what?
Simple stuff. Turn off location tagging before you post pictures. Crop out identifiable things like school logos on t-shirts or even house numbers in the background.
Okay, good reminders. What about those fun AI filters and face swaps?
Be careful there. If you're using them on, say, your kids, make sure they understand what's happening and are okay with it. You're essentially feeding their likeness into these systems. Get consent.
Right. And one more tip?
Yeah, a proactive one. If you have older photos you're thinking of sharing, maybe run a quick reverse image search on them first, like on Google Images or Tiny.
Why?
It helps you see where else that photo might already exist online. Sometimes pictures end up on websites or forums you weren't aware of. It's just a good way to check and manage your digital footprint.
Good practical advice. Okay, so let's recap this whirlwind day, September 25th, 2025.
We saw these incredible jumps in what AI can do. Acing the CFA, designing actual quantum materials in the lab.
Then the market reacting, the strategic chess game. Microsoft hedging with Anthropic, Meta poaching talent, Alibaba's massive global infrastructure bet.
And then AI proving its worth in a high-stakes, real-world scenario. tracking those complex hurricanes much faster and more accurately, potentially saving lives with that 85-mile improvement.
It really feels like that one day captured both sides AI as this new foundational layer for everything.
And also the source of really deep questions about our jobs, our ethics, even our safety. It's all happening at once.
Okay, so time for the final provocative thought for you, the listener, to take away.
Right. Remember we talked about the CFA exam and how AI passed it?
Yeah, specifically the essay part.
There was a fascinating detail in the source material. When they had human graders evaluate the AI's essays, those human graders consistently scored the AI's work about 5.6 points higher than the automated grading systems did.
Wait, the humans liked the AI essays more than the grading algorithm did?
Exactly. The humans, who designed the test and presumably understand nuanced financial reasoning, found more value, more insight in the AI's essays than the machine programmed to score them according to a set rubric.
Yeah.
So, the question to ponder is, what does that tell you? When the human creator sees more merit in the AI's complex reasoning than their own automated scoring system does, what does that suggest about the limits, maybe the biases, baked into our human-designed rubrics when we try to evaluate sophisticated machine intelligence?
Something deep to think about there. How do we measure something that might be reasoning differently, maybe even better in some ways than we expected?
Precisely.
Definitely something to chew on. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.